Blog Talk Radio.
Let's go. Hey, what's going on, everybody? It's Slim Keys, Real Talk, back with another episode. It's 2019. I hope everybody had a great and happy new year. Lee, what's going on, bro?
Yo, what's going on, man? Another day, another way, man. Happy 2019, everybody out there listening to us. Hey, new year, man. Got to do it big for them.
Absolutely. This is actually this is number 80 right here. It's our 80th episode, so something's 80. And we're shouting out something that's 80, so I don't know, but it's out there. Something somewhere is that 80. So shout out to that 80. So I want to ask you this, and I'm not going to waste any time. So to end the new year, usually the UFC has a really stacked out card. This year they did the same. Last year's was stacked. John Jones, your boy John Jones had a dominant performance in the main event. Man, your boy John Jones had Gustafson in looking like an amateur. It was just terrible. I was so disappointed in Gustafson with that performance. And I think, like, you could almost say it might not have been the Gustafson's fault, because I think John was just in his game plan. I think he was just neutralizing everything that Gus was trying to do. And one of those things that I felt that he was doing really well is John was using his reach advantage and keeping Gus at a distance, not letting him get too close. He was keeping Gus more so on the outside and not really letting him land any strikes. And on Gus's side, what I don't understand too is that he wasn't really defending anything. So John was doing good defending Gus's strikes, but Gus wasn't really doing much of anything in terms of defending John's strikes. So I don't really know what that was from Gustafson, but either John looked really good or Gustafson looked really bad or both. I want to hear your perspective on it.
Well, it all depends on how many John Jones fights you've seen. If you really look at his fights, normally what he'll do is he'll use his reach advantage, you know, and those leg kicks to kind of like wear his opponents out. And then normally he'll either hit him with a strong takedown and choke him out, or a strong takedown and ground and pound him. And the thing was, with the Gustafson first fight, John really wasn't using his reach advantage too much. You know, Gustafson basically was tagging him up the whole fight. So basically this time, John actually used his reach advantage and his kicks to his advantage. And then once he took him down, you know, it was a done deal. I think it was, just looking at the fight, I would say John was more dominant because he used his skills more this fight than he did the last fight. And he actually told everybody that he really didn't train too hard the first fight. And, you know, a lot of people didn't believe him. But in all actuality, he showed you that if he really wanted to train hard and he took Alexander Gustafson serious, and he showed you what he could do to him. I think Gustafson, I think the thing was, is he should have been trying to check some of those leg kicks, you know, so that, because I think he got kicked in his leg at the, towards the end of the second round, you could see him limping. And then at the beginning of the third round, John Anik said you could tell that his shin was swollen. And then when he came out to the post fight, he was actually walking with a limp. But I just think John Jones, and people can say that I'm a diehard fan or whatever. I just think he's a dominant fighter, man. There isn't much he can't do inside the octagon. And he put it on display at UFC 232.
Well, That was impressive. Not bad. I'm just eating some ice cream at the same time right now, so. Slight pause.
This guy.
Yeah, I'm always eating during the shows.
But the thing is, though, I think a lot of people wanted Gustafson to win because of all the stuff that happened with the card being moved from Vegas to L.A. You know, I think a lot of people, you know, still feel that Jones is a cheat. And, you know, like I said at our preview show at 232, I said the perfect outcome would have been for it to be a draw, because that way you could get rid of the narrative of if he won because he's juicing. If he lose, he lost because he's not juicing. But at the same time, you know, when I was watching the fight, you know, I was sitting there like, man, he's still a damn good UFC fighter, man. He's probably, man, at least to me, probably the most dominant light heavyweight champion in UFC history. And people can throw DC out there, whatever. DC only had 3 title fights in 3.5 years. Whereas you look at John Jones' record and who he's fought since he's been the heavyweight champ, the light heavyweight champ, you know, I think his record speaks for itself.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I guess I'd have to really go look back and see a list of who's been light heavyweight champion, but I really can't think of I mean, I don't even think there's another guy you could put there to say is more dominant champion. I mean, he's pretty much been the champ since 2011, so what other light heavyweight champion had that long of a run? I don't really know, so well, anyways.
I mean, probably before him, you probably could say Chuck Liddell. I think Chuck Liddell fought at 205. But then you had Chuck Liddell, who ended up eventually losing to Rampage. And then Rampage eventually lost to, I want to say, Forrest Griffin. And then Forrest Griffin ended up losing to Rashad Evans. And then Rashad Evans ended up losing to Lyoto Machida, who ended up losing to Vitor Belfort. Nah, he lost to Shogun Rua. And then John Jones defeated Shogun, who have been champ ever since. So that's just a little rundown of light heavyweight history.
But then John Jones kind of just ran through and beat like the last 5 guys you just named.
Yeah.
If you really think about it, he beat all them guys after that you just named. So Belfort, Machida, he beat Rampage. There was a couple other guys you named. Yeah, he beat him too.
Rashad.
He beat all them guys. So I think you did that on purpose. I think you did that on purpose, Lee. I see what you did. I understand. I see what you did right there. You said that you set that up.
No, really, I didn't. I was just naming, you know, how it went down because, you know. Hey.
So good, bro.
I didn't say
so good.
But I didn't throw. I didn't throw Chael Sonnen in there. I didn't throw Vitor Belfort in there.
No, you did.
You know.
Yeah, you did.
But you
it's
know,
all
man,
good though. I see the jig.
But you know,
see it.
But you know, I just want to. You know, we just got to see what's gonna happen with John and his off time. You know, is he really back, or are we just waiting on the next hammer to drop on him, or see what happens with him? I just hope he's back and. You know, hopefully we'll see him, July? I think Anthony Smith said July he want to fight John. You know, I don't really know what Anthony Smith can really offer other than he hits hard. I don't know whether or not he's technically sound enough to beat John, but we'll see what happens.
Well, one thing I know is this, is that I did see the little exchange they had after the event when Anthony Smith was, like, doing the commentating, and then they were having people switch off on the left screen, all talk to John right after the fight, and then they had, like, real quick, it was, like, like I know they had Michael Bisping was on there, a couple other people that was doing commentary. I can't think, but I just remember seeing Bisping, and then they switched it to Anthony Smith. I think that was either before or after Bisping was on, and he was like, "Hey," he did it quick, like congratulations on his performance, and then he said, "Hey, John, what are you doing? And what are you doing in July or whatever?" And then and then your boy John Jones said, like, he's like, "Man, don't try to use the Fox platform to try and call me out, bro. Don't do that." I was like, damn, talking that shit. Everybody's, oh man, it's been too good. This is too good lately. It's been so good. Everybody's been talking that shit. John Jones been talking that shit, man. To everybody. He was on there. I seen him on Twitter talking that shit to Corey Anderson, which is so funny because I was just talking about this. I was just saying it like the day before he did that. I was like, man, you know what would be a fight? Have Corey Anderson fight Anthony Smith, because Corey Anderson made a good point when he won his fight. He made a good point saying how Anthony Smith basically just kind of came out of nowhere, won a handful of fights, and now he's the number three guy. But yet, Corey Anderson has beaten more top guys in the division than Anthony Smith has. Anthony Smith only beat, like, one top guy, one top 10 guy. Corey Anderson's beaten, I think he said he's beaten four top 10 guys, but yet Anthony Smith is ranked three higher than him. So I think you have them two guys just go fight. I don't really see who else is there. To, you know, at this point, I mean, Corey Anderson's probably going to move up to number five because he just beat the number five guy in the world, in Latifi. So if you usually how the UFC do it is you beat that guy, you get to take his rank. So that's usually how they operate. So I'm thinking if tomorrow's Friday, I mean, that was, you know, last weekend. So I bet you Corey Anderson finds himself in the top five light heavyweights in the division by the weekend. You'll be seeing him move up the ranks. So at that point, he's the top five light heavyweight, and there's really nobody else up there. I mean, Vulcan already lost. Gustafson just lost. DC is a heavyweight now, so he's not there. You really don't have that many guys. So I say you just put Anthony Smith there and have him fight Corey Anderson. You know, the man already called him out, have them two scrap it out, and then Jones, I don't know who he's going to fight in the meantime, but I know Jones said he wants to have three title defenses this year, which I know I'm definitely happy and excited about that, because I think that's what the UFC needs right now. They need a champion to, you know, with all these interim title fights and all these guys cherry-picking fights and acting all strange about fighting a certain guy, And then even when they're not, these injuries, guys are falling out. So many title fights getting scrapped, you know. Champions dropping the bout because they don't want to fight somebody. Like, just all the bullshit that just happens in the past, like, year and a half in the UFC. If you want to even say 2 years, that'd be fair, too. Two and a half years of just, like, bogus with title fights and champions just kind of acting suspect. I think John Jones, that's what the UFC needs, is a guy who wants to compete, a champion who wants to compete at the highest level and is not afraid to take on any contender and isn't just looking for super fights. You know, it's too many champions just wanting to get the bout and then call for a super fight right away, and I think that needs to stop. That's why I say the UFC really needs John Jones right now, because he's willing to fight anybody. He's not just trying to fight Brock Lesnar, so I know he did call him out before, but that doesn't seem to be on his – he doesn't seem to have that on his mind right now. And honestly, I'm happy about that, because I want to see him fight Corey Anderson. I want to see him fight Anthony Smith. I don't care if – I want to see him fight Thiago Santos. That guy's been killing it, so I let him fight him. Let him fight Volkan. I don't even care. Let him fight all them guys. I'm not saying all of them deserve a shot. I'm just saying all of them are in the mix. All them guys have been either off and on with wins or winning back-to-back in the division. So all them guys are up there. So just that's what they need, I think. That's what I think the UFC needs right now, somebody who wants to fight contenders.
Yeah, because right now in the light heavyweight, you got Jones as a champ. They had DC as the number one contender. Gustafson is actually second now. Then you got Anthony Smith, Blachowicz, Uzdemir, and Corey Anderson. So probably what's going to happen is you're going to have John versus Anthony Smith, and probably going to have Corey Anderson fight either Uzdemir or Blachowicz, probably on that same card. Or you might have Thiago Santos fight Uzdemir and then Corey Anderson fight Blachowicz, and then you'll go from there. So if I had to pick the fight, I'd probably have John fight Anthony Smith, because I think Dana White said Anthony Smith is the number one contender. And then I'll probably have maybe Santos and Anderson fight to see who the number one contender would be. I don't know who this John Blachowicz is, but he's ranked number four. So evidently, you might have to have actually, Santos and Anderson are tied. They're tied at six. So, but Thiago Santos has been on a tear here lately, though. So, if I have my choice, I'll probably have John fight Anthony Smith, and then Santos, and then Anderson. So, that's the way I would go with it. But, you know, he said he wanted to fight three times in 2019. So, I don't see how that's going to happen with his first fight being in July. So, that means he's either going to have to fight, what's this, January? So, he might have to fight March.
Yeah, 6 months.
Yeah, he might have to fight March, July, and then December. So, he must be trying to get on that card that Willie's on, or another card in March. So we'll see what happens, though. But like I said, he definitely needs to stay busy. So, you know, the more busy he is in fight camps, the less time he got to be out there messing up and doing stupid stuff. So, but Corey Anderson did hit Anthony Smith with some facts on the call out, though. So I was definitely like, wow, I had to pay that. I had to give him some respect on that one. But I think Anthony Smith,
yeah, man.
I think the UFC already did him the number one contender, so we'll see what happens. I think Anthony Smith has no shot in beating John Jones, especially being that he's a one-trick pony with just striking. So I just don't see it happening for him.
Well, he does have a little bit of submission game, too. He won by submission in his last fight.
Okay.
But did you hear what else came out too? Your boy TJ Dillashaw said some kind of wild stuff that I caught wind of today. I thought I had read it in an article, or maybe I watched an interview like a week or maybe 2 weeks, a week and a half ago, when I first thought I caught wind of this, but then it had kind of bounced back again. And your boy Dillashaw wants to be a three-weight world champion. He wants to be the first three-weight world champion. So it's funny because I was actually just saying this last week, and I was talking to somebody on Twitter, and I was just saying how the concept of a double champ in the UFC is just getting a little bit oversaturated at this point, because it just seems like they're trying to set up every champion to be a two-way champion now. And I don't know. I mean, I feel like the champ versus champ fights, don't get me wrong, I think they are intriguing to have a guy either step up or somebody step down. I guess, you know, it is pretty intriguing. They usually do make for interesting matchups when you pair up two champions. So they've been good fights for the most part, but I don't know. It's just like the achievement of being a double champ, how really awesome is it? I mean, now you're pretty much just giving out title shots to the guy who wins the belt. Like, you're instantly saying he needs to fight for a second belt right when he wins the first belt. So, really, how legit is the double champ when you're not even letting guys defend their belt before you're offering them a second title? Like, I don't understand that concept. Like, guys are going out and taking a second belt, and they don't even defend their singular belt. So, I don't know how I feel about that, bro. That double champ thing is getting old. Because you know what's going to happen now. Because Amanda Nunes just knocked out Cyborg in the first round. So that was awesome. She did a great job. But you know what's going to happen. I guarantee it. She's going to go back to 135, and she's not even going to defend the 145 belt. That's what I think is going to happen. Either which way, she's only going to defend one belt. I think she's going to go to 135. I don't think that it's I don't know, but either way, I don't think she's going to want to fight in both divisions. So I don't see the point of this double champ thing because guys don't even want to fight in both their divisions. So I don't understand the concept of it. But yeah, the point of what I was saying is that Dillashaw said he wants to be a three-weight world champion, and I had said that on Twitter, like, man, double champ's getting old. I want to see a triple champ. Where's the triple champ at? And Dillashaw said, you know, he got the 35. He wants the 25. You know, he's fighting Henry Cejudo in a couple weeks, so that could become a reality. And then the next one that he mentioned was the featherweight title. So you know what fight that comes about. So basically, Dillashaw, what you're saying is, you think you're gonna? Oh my God! I just started laughing. All right. So basically, Dillashaw, what you're saying is, hold on, I'm about to build up to this. Moment of silence, please. All right, Dillashaw. Basically, what he's saying is that he's gonna go up and fight Max Holloway, and take Max Holloway's featherweight belt. Now, that strikes 2 and 3 right there. So just forget that idea and just stick to the fighting the little guys at 125 because that's the only fucking – excuse my language. That's the only other bout you're going to win at this point. You're not going to beat Holloway, so I'm just going to dead that right now. I don't think any of these guys out here are beating Holloway, so we're just going to stop all the talk right now. I'm done entertaining this. Holloway is a god amongst men, okay, and we saw that in his last fight, so there is nothing else that needs to be said here. But I still want to know how you feel about it, though. What do you think about Dillashaw moving up to get a third belt?
I think if Dillashaw, well, I know he's going to beat Cejudo because Cejudo basically isn't that good, and he shouldn't even be the 125 champ. I think it'll be more probably intrigue in the Dillashaw fight if he was fighting Demetrius Johnson for the 125 belt instead of Cejudo. I don't really see a lot of people being interested in that fight, so I'm hoping they have a good co-main event on that card. As far as him moving up to 145, I wouldn't, if I was the UFC, he wouldn't get an automatic title shot. I would probably have him fight maybe Brian Ortega or, you know, somebody in the top five first just to see where he at as far as, you know, does he have the same speed, the same power, and all that good stuff. But I will make him vacate the belt at 135 because there's no need to hold up two divisions. We know the 125 division is going away. So him winning that belt really doesn't mean nothing. And him beating Cejudo, I really don't see that being a feather in his cap. So I'm really, So he wins the 125. But as far as him going up to 145, he needs to fight at least one or two guys in the 145 division versus giving him an automatic title shot. Because there's guys in the 145 division that deserves a title shot that's been in that division for a while. You got Frankie, who I think is in line to get the next shot. And then I think you got this guy, Volkanovski, who just beat Chad Mendez. You still got Jose Aldo down there. You got Cub Swanson down there. You got some big-name guys down there. You still got T-City down there. So I don't think he should get an automatic title shot. I think he should have to fight maybe one or two guys that's in the top 10, maybe even the top 5 to earn his way up, and we'll see what happens then.
Yeah, Moicano too.
Yep. I forgot about him because he's about to fight Jose.
Yeah, him and Aldo are fighting. I don't know. You know, I think regardless of everything is. Oh yeah, actually, Moicano. Actually, I didn't know that he fought Cub Swanson. Wow. Oh, he submitted Cub Swanson in the first round. Oh, wait, wait. Oh, I thought I saw Moicano fight in Boston. Maybe I was thinking of something else. I could have sworn I saw Moicano fight in Boston, but maybe I was wrong. Cause I know that was 2018. He didn't fight that card. Okay. I just had to look back. But, you know, I see, you know, he got to fight contenders. You know, what I'm thinking about is, at this point in time, without seeing him, without having seen him fight any of the contenders, to know where he's at, you know, if he can really hang with the 145ers, given he'd be a smaller guy. You know, I don't think he's a big 135er. I think he's kind of small, but not too small. He's just, I feel like he just fits in with the bantamweights. You know, he's bigger than some of those guys, but I don't think he's. I don't know. I feel like him, his size versus Holloway, I feel like Holloway is much bigger. Holloway is, I think Holloway would have a big reach advantage on him as well. Holloway just, you know, he just keeps taking shots and just walks forward like a zombie. That's the thing. These guys can't handle that.
But Holloway is kind of big for that. Well, Holloway is kind of big for 145 too, though. But, you know, Dillashaw, he still got guys at 135. He got more rights down there. He still got Jim Rivera down there. You got Dawson. You got Sun Sal. You got Aljamain Sterling, I think, at 135. This guy still at 135 that he hasn't fought. So it ain't like he done cleaned out the 135 division and, you know, and can just move straight up the 145 title shot. Let's let him clean out the 135 first.
Yeah. So a lot of stuff was going back and forth today. I was seeing, so my boy T Wood was going back and forth on Twitter with Marty from Nebraska. So Marty from Nebraska was saying some stuff, and he said he has a signed bout agreement. Woodley is yet to sign it. So, in his mind, he's fighting on March 2nd for the welterweight title at, you know, maybe 235. Yeah, I want to say that's probably UFC 235. So, in his mind, he's fighting for the belt on March 2nd, regardless of if it's Woodley or Covington. But what I don't understand is, if the champ hasn't signed it, so what the UFC going to do? Just, what y'all going to do? Make an interim fight again? You gonna make the interim champion defend his interim title versus Usman versus Marty from Nebraska? I think that's a snooze. That's what I think. That's a snooze of a fight right there. If y'all do Covington versus Marty from Nebraska as the main event in that card, you might be lucky to sell like 150,000. That's what I think. You might be lucky. I think if you do Woodley and Covington, though, I'm just saying, I think that's the fight everybody wants to see. I don't think it really comes down to which guy is the better matchup. I don't think it's really that is in play here. I think it's that Woodley is more interested in the Covington fight. Being the back and forth they've had and all the trash that Covington has talked about him, you know, I'm sure he can't wait to get his hands on Covington. So I would think that he'd rather that fight, and that's why he hasn't signed a bout agreement versus Kamaru Usman. But I really have no idea. I mean, I want to see him sign an agreement either way. I want to see the guy fight. So. My boy Woodley needs to get in there. Let's see.
I think with Woodley, man, I think Woodley is, I can't even believe I'm about to say this because I really like him. I think Woodley is one of these guys now that, you know, he thinks that he can pick and choose who and when he wants to fight. And I think the UFC is actually growing probably tired of his act with that. And basically what they're doing now is putting his feet to the fire when they say, I think Dana White said it, that Usman will be fighting for the belt on March 2nd. It'll be either against Woodley or against Covington for the welterweight belt. And kind of funny how it seems like to me, just reading the back and forth, that you probably going to take this the wrong way because you're a Woodley guy. It seems like to me that he wants the Kobe fight more than he wants the Usman fight. And I think the reason being is because he knows he can beat Kobe Covington. And I think the whole world knows he can beat Kobe Covington because Kobe really isn't that good. The only thing Kobe has that works in his favor is he keeps up a fast pace. But at the same time is once you get taken down and you get punched in your face a couple times, that pace is going to slow down. But I think Usman is the better matchup, but I think he wants to shut up Kobe. So we'll see what happens, man. I just think Woodley just need to either commit to one fight or the other. So I think he want to fight Kobe because Kobe is an easier fight for him. But my thing is this. If he beats Kobe, then fight Usman, and then at the end of the year, let's get GSP versus Tyron Woodley to see who the best welterweight champion of all time is. And that would be a great fight to end the year next year. But at the same time, I just don't understand. I mean, I know he broke his hand or whatever. We really don't know the severity of the injury that he had. But it seems like it takes the UFC so – it's like it's so hard for them to make a fight for him.
All right, well, my take on it is this. I feel like that I get where you could come up with a suspicion of Woodley trying to pick and choose fights, you know, who he's going to fight and when and what order. I can see where people would get that suspicion from. Like, it's understandable. I don't really know what he's doing. But, you know, the thing is that I believe no matter which way you slice it, I think it's going to be one of them two guys. It just depends who goes first. I think both of those fights are going to happen in 2019. Covington and Kamaru Usman will both fight Woodley in 2019. It just depends on who's going to go first and who's going to go second. So for him to really prefer Covington, it doesn't really matter. I feel like because he knows the next guy after that is Usman. That's the next guy in line. He'll be the number one contender, or he is the number one contender, but rightfully, Covington did fight an interim fight versus Rafael Dos Anjos last year. So, rightfully so, the champion should fight the interim champion. So, it would make sense that Covington is ahead of Usman just for that reason. But then after that, you know, Usman also beat Dos Anjos, so he is right there. You know, they oh, yeah, and I think Usman beat it. Yeah, I mean, it's irrelevant. But either way, both of them guys are going to go. It just depends on who's going to go first. So for Woodley to really pick which one goes first, I don't think changes much because he knows whatever guy doesn't go first is going to be second right after that. So he's not really avoiding anything by, you know, not signing this agreement but then signing the other one because he's going to have to sign the other one the next fight. So I think that's really the only way you could slice it as one of them two guys. I think he fights both them guys in 2019. Those would probably be his two fights for 2019. I would like to see three fights out of him in 2019, just like I want to see three fights out of John Jones. I had tweeted that out, and then the next day, I'm not saying it's because of this, just that, you know, coincidentally, I had been saying, you know, let's see. I actually tweeted at John Jones. I said, let's see three title fights, champ. And then he ended up saying, like, a day or two later, like, that he intends to do three fights in 2019. So I kind of more or less got my wish. So thank you, John Jones. I appreciate you and all your hard work and your motivation. You know, I'd like to see Woodley with the same mind state this year. I'd like to see him push for a third fight. You know, it'd be nice to see one. You know, hopefully no injuries. One, you know, for the March 2nd. And then maybe come back for International Fight Week.
Yep.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Jump on that card. And then probably come back for the end of the year, either MSG or the New Year's card going into 2020. So that was what I would picture it going like, you know, three big cards. Yeah, I think, you know, I said earlier too about the Woodley and George St. Pierre. I think if he would have beat both them guys this year, you know, theoretically, that would be his fifth and sixth title defense. So, you know, beating both them guys, six title defenses in the division. I'm just waiting to see when George St. Pierre is going to poke his head out. You know, he's been real quiet about fighting at welterweight again. I don't really know why. But, you know, he was really vocal about wanting to fight Bisping, you know, at middleweight. So I don't know really what's changed. But he's been quiet.
I think what'll happen is if you have Woodley beat both Usman and Covington, I think you'll have probably Woodley call him out after he beat the second guy. And I think that'll probably start sparking that, and that'll start probably sparking GSP's interest. And I think Dana White will probably hop on the phone with GSP like, hey, let's do this New Year's Eve, this New Year's card, you versus Tyron Woodley for the welterweight to determine who's the best welterweight ever. I think that'll spark his interest. It'll be in his natural weight class. And I think Woodley will basically, he will have to do all the groundwork leading up to that fight. I think the best way for him to make that fight happen is depending on the first guy he fights. He should call GSP out. He should call him out, be like, you know, I know I got another fight against, not disrespecting the next guy in line, which either be Usman or Covington. So we know it's going to be Usman or Covington or Covington Usman. And then, you know, once he beat the first guy, which I think would be Covington, I think he's going to fight Covington on March 2nd. Just for some strange reason, I think it's going to be Covington. And not because he got that bullshit interim title that never shouldn't even have been a fight to begin with in the first place. I just think it's going to be Covington because Covington was supposed to be the guy he supposed to fight, but then he ended up fighting Darren Till. And I think, you know, I think that he done talked this way. He done talked so much shit that the UFC probably just going to throw him in there. But I think Willie definitely is going to have to start chanting GSP's name after each win. He's going to have to just throw it out there to start getting the public to, you know, to start ramping it up and to get the UFC backing. I think he's going to have to do all the legwork.
Yeah, because I think what GSP is like, I don't even remember the last time, I mean, I don't know. When GSP wants to fight somebody, it's usually, I mean, at least lately, GSP is the one that kind of come out and, I mean, I don't remember Bisping saying anything about that fight until it just randomly come out of nowhere. So I wouldn't imagine that. I mean, I do think George St. Pierre just kind of waited for the right time. I think he wanted to be a double champ like earlier in his career, but, you know, a lot of people wanted to see him and Anderson Silva go. And a lot of people speculate that he didn't want to fight Anderson Silva, so that's why he waited. And then, you know, kind of it did seem like he waited for like a certain guy to be the champ, specifically somebody he knew he could beat in Michael Bisping. So, and then he went and did it. and then drop the belt because, you know, he don't want to fight these guys that are waiting at at middleweight. You know, Robert Whittaker, Yoel Romero, Jacare. You know, he doesn't want to have to deal with those guys. So those are all beasts of fighters. So why would GSP want to stick around and defend against guys like that? It's just it's crazy. You're asking, you know, to have three wars. You know, those guys are. It's the middleweight is a very top heavy division. You know, there's a lot of really good guys over there. So that's a tough division to even be the champion of. Honestly, it's kind of amazing. And with that being said, actually, that kind of just brings me into another question that I wanted to ask you, because I'm pretty sure Robert Whittaker's title fight is coming up real soon. I'm pretty sure that's in a couple weeks, 3 or 4,
yep.
Maybe 4 weeks. So
yeah,
Whittaker, yeah, I want to say it's early February, like first or second week of February. So Whittaker and Gastelum, how you feel about that fight?
Man, Gastelum has definitely been on a tear here lately. I think he's one guy that I'm going to start picking against, because every time I pick against him, he seems to win. But I love me some Bobby Knuckles, man. And plus, he's going to be fighting at home. Isn't he fighting in Australia? Isn't that? Yeah, that's in Australia. So.
Melbourne, Australia. February 10th.
But the thing is, though, is Gastelum has actually went to Brazil and beat Brazilians in Brazil.
Yeah, he beat Jacare in Brazil.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy.
I don't really know really which way to lead it towards this fight, even though Whittaker is my guy. I like him, and I think Gastelum is finally in a weight division that fits him. If I had to pick right now, I would go with Whittaker only because he's fighting at home. But at the same time, home court advantage means nothing when you fight Gastelum.
Yeah, that might be true. No, I think Gastelum is a little bit. I think Gastelum was feeling himself a little bit too much when he knocked out Bisping. You know, just for everybody to just be reminded, that wasn't even a fight. Like, Bisping kind of come off, like, what, 3 weeks from getting choked out by GSP, and then takes the fight with Gastelum and gets KO'd. Obviously, he got KO'd. Man didn't even let himself recover from being choked unconscious two or 3 weeks prior. So Bisping kind of just threw himself into the fire with that fight. And then Gastelum knocks him out, which I think everybody expected. I mean, who really thought Bisping was going to beat Gastelum in that condition? The man didn't even let himself recover. So I think Gastelum got to calm down. At least that win does not mean nothing. It's like, you know, a lot of guys beat a former champion, like, you didn't beat Bisping in full form. You beat Bisping at, like, 10%, 10%, whatever you want to call it, you know, capacity or 10% of potential. That's the Bisping that you beat. So it's kind of that don't really do nothing for me. Probably the more impressive of the late was the win over Jacare. I mean, even that, though, yeah, I guess – I can't hate on that one. That's a big one. Jacare is a beast. So, you know, Jacare's last fight with Weidman, he looked really good. So, it just kind of makes you think, how good is Gastelum? You know, having beat a guy like that. And Jacare is a beast. Jacare is a sick ground game, and he's got dangerous hands. So, it just makes you think, how good is Calvin Gastelum? But at the same time, Whittaker just come off a crazy rematch with Yoel Romero. So, I don't know.
Crazy
it's,
fight.
You know, one thing that I want to know.
Probably one of the fights of the year.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think that's a top five. Probably, actually, nah, I'd say that's probably a top three fight for me.
Yeah, that's top three. That's top three.
Somewhere top three of 2018. Because I can't, every time I think of the fight of the year, I just think of that. Oh, that one, Yair Rodriguez versus Korean Zombie. That's also in the
yeah,
top
that
three.
Was a good one.
Those two fights, and then there's one more. I can't think of it off the top, but I know it'll come to me. We're going to get back to that. But, no, Whitaker had a crazy, you know, second fight with Yoel Romero, and it was a close fight. You know, I actually thought Yoel Romero might could have got a decision there. I was thinking that he would have, but he didn't. I'm still a little bit, I don't know how I feel about it to this day, but I could see how a lot of people had Whitaker winning. You know, it was, I thought it was a really close fight, and it came down to the championship rounds, I thought. I probably had it 3-2 either way for either guy. And I think one thing that Whitaker has a lot better than Gastelum, I think will play a factor in their fight, is cardio.
Yeah.
I think Whitaker's cardio is going to beat the dog shit out of Gastelum. I don't think Gastelum is going to be able to handle Whitaker's pace. And when it goes, if Gastelum can't get him, I'm going to say this, if Gastelum can't get Whitaker out of there in like the first, I want to say three rounds, yeah, I think Whitaker takes that fight, because Gastelum is going to gas out pretty bad. I mean, he does not have the gas tank that Whitaker has, and especially to perform at the level that Whitaker does in the championship rounds. Gastelum's not going to be as efficient as Whitaker when it comes down to in the start of the fourth round. I just don't think he can handle it. I mean, I was watching them. They did like this big sprint during the Ultimate Fighter. I was watching one of the episodes, the Whitaker versus Gastelum Ultimate Fighter. You know, the Ultimate Fighter heavy hitters. They did like a big sprint, just him and Whitaker. You know, they had water and everything, and you know, Whitaker didn't even stop for water. Like, they did, like, I don't even know how many laps it was, but it was a long race. Like, they ran for, like, I want to say it was, like, 30 minutes or something. They ran for a long time. They did lap after lap on this, like, track. And Whitaker, like, they kept trying to give him water, and he just didn't even stop. Like, this guy didn't even look human. The guy just kept running. I was like, this dude's a straight beast. Whitaker's ass.
Yeah, Gastelum throwing
y'all
up.
Y'all sleep on this guy. Yeah, what'd you say? Yeah, Gastelum was having a tough time.
Yeah, he was throwing up and everything.
So I think that's going to come into play in the fight. I think Whitaker's cardio and his efficiency going into the championship rounds is going to be a tough thing that Gastelum's going to have to deal with and try to compete against. I don't think he's going to be able to compete against that. You know, so hopefully, you know, if Gastelum is to win, he's got to stop Whitaker in the first three rounds. After that, I don't think he can win. I mean, at the same time, you could have said that about Derek Lewis too. I mean, I know it's kind of a different, I guess that's kind of a different scenario, but a lot of people probably counted out Derek Lewis versus Volkov because he was looking gassed after one round. But then, you know, round two, I thought he was losing. Round three, come out with just a random shot and ended the fight. So, I mean, I guess something like that could happen. But at the same time, this is not the heavyweights. And Whitaker does not move nearly as slow as either of them guys. So to catch him with a shot at any round is going to be a tough task for Gastelum. So I don't know. I mean, I like how you said that every time you pick against Gastelum, you end up being wrong. So you want to go pick for Gastelum, but I welcome you to do that because I imagine we're going to run DraftKings for this event. So I welcome you to pick Gastelum because I'm definitely not picking Gastelum. I'm going to roll with Whitaker, definitely, because I just don't think Gastelum can keep up with his pace.
Well, you know, that's February. You know, we just ended January, so, you know, we'll see what happens. Both guys still got to make it to the fight. But, you know, we kind of talked about this earlier, but I just want to send a shout-out to Amanda Nunes, man. Amanda Nunes put on a show that's going to go down, and basically she's the greatest women's MMA fighter in history. She beat Ronda Rousey, Miesha Tate, Cyborg, And those three are basically considered the three greatest women mixed martial artists of all time. And the way she did it in such dominating but powerful fashion, I couldn't believe it when I was sitting here watching it, because I had a fight party, of course, and I was sitting here watching it, and I'm like, wow, she done knocked her down twice, and then she face planted her the third time. Don't understand what Cyborg's game plan was. She's the bigger fighter, the more, you probably can say, the more powerful fighter. Why will you sit back and let the fight develop instead of rushing in? Most people, when they get knocked out, is normally because they're rushing in with their hands down or they backing up with their hands down. And lo and behold, she rushed in and get caught. So after she got caught the first time, it's like, okay, back up, take a breath, calm down. No, what she do? Rush back in and get tagged again. So then my thing was her pride kicked in. I can't let her do this to me. And that's when she got knocked out. So shout out to Amanda Nunes, cementing herself as probably the greatest women's mixed martial artist of all time and dominating fast against Cyborg. And my man Keys called it. I thought Cyborg would come in, stalk her, you know, be patient, you know, wear her down with her strikes. And I thought the only chance Amanda had was basically taking her down, wrestler, you know, and that would be her key to victory. But she proved me wrong, and Cyborg proved me wrong also. So congratulations, Amanda Nunes.
Yeah, congratulations. That was awesome. You know, your boy actually predicted that a couple of days before. And I remember you being like, yeah, man, he was the only guy saying that that everybody was underestimating Holm, you know, when she fought Ronda Rousey. So, you know, that kind of put the image in my mind, like, all right, then I'm going to listen to this guy. And I end up picking Nunes for my contest. And I've actually ended up picking three contests, and two of the three I picked Nunes, and then the third, one of the three I picked Cyborg, just to give it the benefit of the doubt, because I thought Nunes would win. You know, I changed my pick at the last like 2 days. I was like, I think Nunes is gonna win. I'm going for some underdogs here, and then I gave it the benefit of the doubt, picked Cyborg for one of the three contests, and that lost me. You know, I would have won. I would have had a sweep that night, won all three contests, but it was literally came down to that pick, that Cyborg pick, like that tanked me in the third contest. So, yeah, I need to just triple down in the future. I can't go 2-1 like I did and try to give the other side of the benefit of the doubt. I ain't doing that. If I pick three contests for the Whitaker fight, I'm tripling down on Whitaker. I ain't doing fucking. Excuse my language, I ain't doing two Whitaker and one Gastelum. I can't go with that logic again. It failed me once. I can't let it fail me twice. And you, man, hey, one more thing that just reminded me of. So you know how the last time when you said I only beat you in DraftKings is I picked two of the same fight?
That's not what I said. That's not what I said. I said I didn't know.
So what happened with this event?
Oh, you whooped my ass this last time. But, but I think you got me what you got me on the Corey Anderson fight. You got me on the you didn't take Ryan Hall, did you? You got me on Nunes, Corey Anderson. Oh, actually, those
I don't know if I even picked
with
that fight.
Yeah, I
Ryan
think you
Hall
got me on the Nunes and Corey Anderson. And then I actually took your boy Montel Jackson, who you didn't take. And then I took this other guy on the aisle, on the undercard, and he ended up losing. He ended up losing by decision. But yeah, it was you whooped my ass this time. But
I ended up picked Montel Jackson in one of my other contests, and he won big. I think that was one of the first fights of the night. That might have been on Fight Pass, and he won big. So he won me like 90, I think it was like 98 points or something like that in one of my other contests. So that really put me up. So
yeah.
What do you say?
I said he came in overweight. He didn't make weight.
Oh yeah, he missed weight.
Yep.
And you know, man, fighters who miss weight, they always win. It doesn't fail.
Okay. It's something else that I got to get off my chest, man. BJ Penn, Carlos Condit, go ahead and call it a career, man. You guys have been warriors. Y'all have did the UFC a great service. Y'all have earned fans worldwide. Y'all have fought some of the top names in the game. Y'all have been top names in the game. It's time. You have nothing else to prove. Your careers are cemented. You'll probably be in the UFC Hall of Fame one day. So it's okay to call it a career. It'll be okay. Don't keep going out there and losing in the fashion that you guys are losing. It's hurting your legacy. It's basically making us forget about all the good fights and dominating fights you've had. We're just looking at you as a shell of yourself. So lay the gloves down. Go jumpers. Go do something within the UFC organization. And it's okay. It's okay to retire. It's okay.
Yeah, I think them two guys, I agree with that. I think them two guys got to call it quits on the on fighting, man. They done more than enough in the sport. So, like, Carlos Condit's one of those guys you look at and say, wow, like, this is somebody who's achieved a lot, and he's showed us a lot of different things. You know, very skilled fighter, and one of them guys who never won a belt, you know, but has still done a lot for his legacy without having won a belt. BJ Penn is somebody who has won a belt. I think he was a double champion or champion in two-weight divisions at one time. And he's done more than enough, you know. Both them guys, they can call it quits and do what's right for them. I think that's the right move at this point. There's no need to keep going up and getting paid to fight. You've been doing that, both of y'all, for a lot of years. So I think there's a time and place to, you know, hang the gloves up.
Yeah. I think we talked about this on the preview show, is that I think BJ Penn definitely needs to retire. I think Jim Miller needs to retire. Diego Sanchez needs to retire. This Carlos Condit, 6 losses in a row. I didn't know that. So normally, if you lose 3 in a row, the UFC normally cut you. I think Carlos Condit, he needs to go ahead and maybe one more fight, you know, maybe a send off fight for him. But BJ Penn doesn't need a send off fight. I mean, me and Keith, you know, we all about the fighters' safety and health. Like, there's no way Chuck Liddell should have been in an octagon fighting anybody. Diego Sanchez, he's punched drunk. There's no way the UFC should still be putting him in fights. It just comes a point that taking those blows just isn't worth it. And I think the UFC probably needs to step in and maybe force these guys to not get in the ring, you know. Maybe not in the UFC octagon. Maybe, you know, Bellator probably sign them or whatever. But as fans, we want to remember these guys as being the warriors they were in their primes, not as guys that are possibly been a induced coma after a fight, you know, because they shouldn't have been an octagon. That's all we're saying. We're just looking out for the fighter's safety.
So I just want to look at one thing. You had said this earlier, and I just wanted to bring this back up about you know, Tony Ferguson and Khabib, man. What? So at this point, the last news that I heard, I mean, generally it goes, you know, we hear the fight's going to happen. The fight's going to happen. The fight's definitely going to happen. You know, you have a reporter asking Dana White, like, you know, as a fight fan, what's the next fight for Khabib Nurmagomedov? He says, you know, Dana White says, as a fight fan, you got to go with Tony Ferguson, right? So then Dana White says that. That was like a couple months ago. And then that put it in the mind, you know, that put in everybody's mind, okay, if Dana White said that's got to be the next fight, is it? But, you know, everyone's kind of get hype, okay, the fight's going to happen in 2019, okay, after the suspension, whatever, that's going to be Khabib's next fight. But now, you know, Khabib's manager come out and say that, you know, Tony Ferguson is definitely not Khabib's next fight, and that's not, you know, that's definitely not the fight that they want next. Basically, that they want a money fight. You know, they want, and then Tony Ferguson's not that. And that kind of just steers that fight off course again. And at this point, I don't know if we'll see that fight in 2019. I don't know if we'll see that fight ever, because I don't know, man. It's been a long time. I mean, that fight, it's cursed. That fight is just cursed. I have very little faith in that fight happening at this point. The one thing I just want to bring up is I think it's so funny how when they were doing the press conference, when they had Max Holloway step in on, you know, 6 days notice to fight Khabib in the main event of UFC 223 last April, they did the press conference and Khabib was all about saying to Holloway that he's only there to fight for money. And he kept saying to the crowd, I fight for legacy and you're here for money. Kept saying that to the crowd. Now look at you, Khabib. Your manager's out here saying that you're only looking for the money fight. You're not going to fight Ferguson because that won't bring you in enough money. Look at you now. Oh, my God. Did you become exactly what you used to stand against? I think you did. What a game. And that's all I have to say.
But, you know, it goes to show you, man, that the UFC is a business, man. It's a means to an end. I'm sorry, that, you know, some guys get in this game, you know, to be champions. Some guys get in this game to make money. Some guys get in this game to do both. And I think Khabib is the evolution of, you know, the business side of it. You know, once you become the champ and your name is basically up in lights, then it's time to start making money off your name and what you do. You know, nobody did it better than Conor did. Conor basically, you know, Conor had a blueprint of how he wanted to, you know, establish himself. He came in, I think his first two fights, you probably wouldn't even never recognize the guy. After his third fight, you know, he started talking. His fourth fight, he was talking some more. The next thing you know, he's fighting for the belt and all this. And he started making himself more marketable. I think Khabib is probably thinking about the same blueprint. But at the same time, is we as UFC fans, we have more respect for Conor McGregor because he has fought more guys. And whereas you look at Khabib's record, he's 27-0, but he hasn't really fought anybody. I really can't respect the 27-0. Now, as far as him and Tony Ferguson, the UFC needs to make this fight happen. I know they have made it three times before and it fell through three times. But I think now is the time that you make it and, you know, make it probably maybe a summertime fight, you know. Everybody wants to see it. I think Khabib, I don't know why he refused to fight Ferguson. It's like he's, I hate to use the word scared, but he refuses to fight Ferguson. He pulled out twice in the first and got hurt. And now he's a champ. And now I think Dustin Poirier was saying that he's in line to get a title shot. I don't know how he's going to jump Tony Ferguson, and I don't see Dustin Poirier being a bigger draw against Khabib than Tony Ferguson. So we'll see what happens. Hopefully somebody is sprinkling holy water over that fight once it's made so we can finally see it. But Khabib is just doing what guys do now, Keys. You know, when you become a popular figure, now it's time for you to start making money off your name and your likenesses, and that's what Khabib is doing. That fighting for legacy stuff, that only goes so far. We both know that you fight for legacy, you know, early, and you fight for money late.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, that's understandable. You know, 2019 is going to be a good year. You know, we're going to talk more about a lot of this stuff. And as things come up, you know, we'll do another show this week. I hope everybody's New Year is off to a good start. I know mine is. Lee, I hope yours is. And, you know, I enjoyed tonight's show. We'll be back with another one very soon. And especially I'm going to want to talk more about it as everything develops with the Woodley fight, you know, March 2nd. That's, you know, because if that was going to get signed, you would think, you know, average 2-month fight camp, you would think them guys are already training for that fight. So something's got to give soon because I don't know, unless Woodley's just like in a fight camp right now and then he's going to sign the fight at the last second when he already finished his fight camp. I don't know. Usually things don't happen that way, but I guess that'd be not the craziest thing that's happened if it did. So as that story develops, I'm going to want to jump back on and talk more about that. So amongst other things. So anyways, it was a good show. Lee, if you have last things you want to say to them, go ahead. I'm going to give you the floor and then we'll be out.
Ben, this is episode 80. I dedicate episode 80 to Steve Largent, one of the greatest wide receivers to ever play the game. He wore number 80, Seattle Seahawks, played all his whole career in Seattle, Hall of Famer. You know, happy 2019, everybody. Look for Lee and Keys to keep coming at you hard and strong with this UFC news and other stuff. We try to keep it basically all UFC. We're going to have a year in review show probably maybe next week. Me and Keith still got to iron out how we want the format of the show to be. Because I don't want it to be all about UFC. I want it to be about the year 2018. And, you know, we'll talk more. So thanks for listening. And always in closing, you know how I like to do it. My man Keith love it. Peace.
Let's hear it. No, that ain't the one. That ain't the one.
Which one? Which one you want?
No, that's it. But it was just it came off too strong. We need to write the same tone that you always, you know, that smooth, super cool shit.
Peace.
It's a wrap.